It is officially game week for Florida State as the Noles kick things off this Saturday inside Doak Campbell Stadium. And that means we have made it, my friends. Football season is back, and I couldn't be more excited just to have fall in the air, football season upon us, and Florida State back in action for what we hope is a much better season this time around. Now, that means it is time to put the final touches on our preseason content. We've previewed the offense for you. We've previewed the defense. We've talked about fall camp. But now it's time to flip the script and look at the other side of the street. Let's talk about the teams on Florida State's schedule, the road ahead for the Seminoles, and let's also do some big picture talking points on the season, how they can get to a successful season, as well as some cool things at the end of this episode with S&P data that you guys know if you've watched this show for a while that we like to nerd out on some stuff. I got some stuff I think you guys are really going to enjoy, so stay tuned to the end for that. So what is up, Noles Nation? I'm Jesse from Plant the Spear, and thank you for joining me for another episode. Now, unfortunately, and obviously, my co-host Michael is not available for this episode today, as this is our third time trying to get this episode out. I had some internet issues last night that pushed us back to the point we could not get it in. So I'm doing it for you guys here on Monday of game week. But I do have his win percentages here that I'll be sharing throughout the show, which is how we're going to do that this year, rather than necessarily a raw win-loss, which I will still provide. We're going to do some win percentages as we go through these games and break these down. So if you guys enjoy the content that we bring you here at Plant the Spear, we're only getting ready to ramp it up even more. We're going to have live shows throughout the week, live post games, game previews, all kinds of stuff. So it's a great time to lock in with us and smash that like button, smash that subscribe button, and hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode. For my podcast only listeners, go ahead and drop a rate and review and help us reach other Noles fans. And so I appreciate you guys watching. And let's start today's episode with a word from today's sponsor. Now, if you guys are going to be in one of these, are at one of these games coming up in Tallahassee, New Mexico State, or that big Labor Day matchup against SMU, and you want some new FSU gear, the best place to get it is, of course, Alumni Hall FSU. You can find their in Tallahassee location at 1415 Timber Lane Road, or you can shop online at Alumni Hall FSU. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure you save 10% with code SPEAR. If you're going to buy the gear, you might as well save some cash. And so we appreciate them sponsoring this episode and for you guys supporting them throughout the years. Now, let's start with some big picture takeaways on the season, some big picture thoughts to kind of set the stage for the opponent previews and the things we're about to talk about coming up. Now, the first big picture key I have is the little things. This is something I wrote an article about on plantthespear.com the other day that you can check out for a full breakdown on. But this is something that Deuce Robinson talked about at ACC football kickoff, about how this team really failed to do the little things when it counted last year, and it produced results they didn't expect. You can go back and look at the dividing line in the wins and losses of where it was just a couple of extra penalties, a couple of extra missed tackles, a couple of turnovers and missed field goals that turned a team last year that frankly should have been an 8 or 9 win team when you look at the one score games that they lost into a 5-win team, right? How many opportunities did they have to beat Virginia? You know, they should have beat that Stanford team. They should have beat NC State, but it was 13 penalties against Stanford. It was a drop pick six, a missed tackle, a bobble catch against Virginia. It was 4 turnovers against NC State. It was Deuce Robinson getting hurt in the Pitt game that probably cost them that game. So the margin between that team being a 5 and 8 or 9 win team was very slim, which I think sets you up for where that expectation can be this year. But Florida State's going to have to do those little things because a lot of the games on this schedule, they're not going to be favored in, but if they are, it'll probably be around a touchdown outside of the cupcake games. If they're not favored, it probably won't be by more than 2 touchdowns unless you're talking about Alabama, Miami. So those are the types of games that you really have to win in the margins. And to do that, it's the little things. It's the turnover margin. It's the little things that count when the game is on the line that they did not do well last year. But Deuce Robinson did say they have made it a point to really hyper-focus on those things. So that's something that they have to do well this season. The second big picture item for me is momentum and adversity, right? This team had all the momentum in the world last year to begin the season. Then when adversity struck, they fell off a cliff. And that is something you cannot let happen this year. Obviously, this program has not handled adversity well the past 2 years. But they did in 2023, right? They lose Jordan Travis, they go to the Swamp, and they win with a backup quarterback. They lose that backup quarterback, they go to the ACC Championship, and they win with a third-string quarterback. They responded to adversity. Last year, you let one loss snowball into another, and they just did not respond well. So, you know, when you look at the schedule, it's pretty front-loaded. And unless you expect Florida State to go undefeated, newsflash, not many of us do, they're going to have a couple of points of adversity, right? It's going to strike a few times early in the season, but they do have winnable games throughout the schedule, especially on the back half. So can you avoid folding up under adversity? Can you fight through that? Stay in the season, stay playing these games with full effort through 12 games of the season, and you can win some games on the back half. I mean, that's you can't let another Florida situation happen where you let a bad offense hang 40 on you because you basically had quit by that point. So that's going to be really my biggest question of the season. I've talked about that a lot, is how they handle adversity and can they stay in the fight for 12 games. Now, the final big picture talking point that I have here is the health of this team, right? They are going to have to stay healthy. I like a lot of what Florida State has in their starting 22, you know, down to about 28, maybe 30 players. And it's not to say that they don't have bodies that they can't put out there that could potentially surprise us. But when you're going against a slate of teams like you have this year, you need the most talented depth you can have. And really, there's, I don't want to jinx anything, knock on wood, but there's like six or eight guys that I think if they were to go down for Florida State, it changes your win-loss projection exponentially. And so to me, Florida State really has to stay healthy, especially at a few key positions. And as we talk through these teams, this is projecting them with a healthy Florida State roster. So that is the three big things I'm watching. Now, can Florida State, you know, when we come to this team and I give my overall thoughts on it, I am cautiously optimistic about this team. I think if Ashton Daniels can have a good year, and I've been high on him, I know the Film Guy Network breakdown has been making its circles around the social media, if most of you guys have not seen that already. You know, if he hits the ceiling, I think he can be really good for Florida State. I think he can help out an offensive line that has questions. I think you have a running back room that can also help out that offensive line. I think Herb Hand can at least give you a floor there. I think on the defense, it's year two under Tony White. I think you got some more continuity there. You've added some good pieces. I like the new coaching additions, including Tom Herman, who can be a guy that can help Mike Norvell as an associate head coach with him back focusing on the offense. I like Tim Harris Jr. as the coordinator to help with the offense as well. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but that's a tough schedule. And that is the reason why Florida State has the expectations that they do. I actually noticed this week that FanDuel actually dropped their line to 5.5 wins for Florida State this year, but the juice is to the over. And Hard Rock Bet did say that Florida State was their most heavily bet team to the under at 6.5 wins. And the reason I bring that up is because I do think Florida State can exceed those expectations. By how much remains to be seen, but at the same time, you know, there is internal pressure for this team because it's Florida State and you want to get back to that standard. There's internal pressure to save Mike Norvell's job if you're the players and the coaches. But at the same time, when it comes down to between the lines, man, the game pressure is on everybody else, right? Alabama's a team that's got pressure of their own. They're trying to prove that they're not kind of trending downwards. You got Louisville, SMU, Miami, and Clemson on the schedule. They're all trying to win the ACC. So the game pressure is going to be on them. So Florida State really just needs to go out there, man, have fun, let it all hang out, and, you know, really just go out and kind of play free this year. I think that's a couple of big things that I'm looking at as well. So, man, before we get into the schedule breakdown going team by team, I just want to put something on you guys' radar this year that we are going to be rolling out a new Friday show that's going to air from around noon to 1 Eastern on Friday, maybe a little bit longer than that, where we're going to go through some national talk, some Florida State talk. We're going to be doing some Q&As as well as taking questions from the chat. And so make sure you guys lock in with us on that. That's going to be a really fun thing on Fridays. It's going to be called the Road to Saturday Show by Plant the Spear. Because, you know, on Fridays, you're pretty much focused on Saturday. You're at work, but you're not really at work. Traveling to the game, whatever that case may be. So be on the lookout for that as well. Now, getting into the schedule breakdown, when I look at this schedule from a whole, I kind of look at it in a 5-3-4 method, right? You have the first five games where we're talking about New Mexico State, SMU, Alabama, Central Arkansas, and Virginia. And to me, I don't expect you to probably win every one of those games. But I think going into the toughest three-game stretch on your schedule, which is at Louisville, at Miami, and and home versus Clemson, I think you need to be 4-1 coming out of that first five game stretch to really keep some momentum going in case those three games that are tough right after that don't go your way, right? Because then you talk about them four games on the backside when you're talking about Boston College, Pitt, NC State, and Florida. Those are very winnable games. And so if you can be no worse than, say, 5-3 going into those back four games, you have an opportunity to have a respectable season, right? 8-4 is certainly on the table at that point. 9-3 would even be on the table at that point. I mean, but that being said, when you look at the schedule, it would also not surprise me if you went into that bye week before Clemson at like 2-5 or 3-4 and Mike Norvell gets fired and we're in our interim staff and this season goes off the rails. So to me, you know, again, I don't think you're going to go a clean sweep in those first games, in those first eight games. But man, I think in the first five, you need to be 4-1. I think you need to go 1-2 between Louisville, Miami, and Clemson. And then I think you need to win at least three or four of those games in the backside of the schedule. So that's kind of really how I break it down. And that has a lot to do with the momentum and adversity talk that I talked about in the opening of this episode. But let's just jump right into the team, starting with game one, New Mexico State, this Saturday inside Doak Campbell Stadium at 7 o'clock on the CW network. Most of you will probably spend more time looking to make sure that's on your cable package than you will worried about the preview of this game. But to talk about it, the line is around 30.5 points. FSU is a heavy favorite at home. New Mexico State did lose 42-9 versus Tennessee last year. So I think that's the kind of game you're looking for out of Florida State this year, kind of that 45-10, 42-7 type of game. I think you'd be happy with there, you know, because you're going to get some garbage time towards the end, hopefully. Now, New Mexico State last year, they were 4-8. They are projected to be a bottom 15 FBS team. Their offense was pretty bad last year, 111th in scoring offense, 136, which is second worst in the country at running the ball, 77 yards per game, 2.6 yards per carry. They were 130th in turnovers lost, so a very turnover-prone team. Defense was a little bit stronger, 88th in scoring defense, and they were 14th in turnovers created, so they are an opportunistic defense there. But again, you're talking about number 125 in the S&P Plus rankings, number 129 in ESPN FPI. So, man, this is a team that you should definitely beat. They do bring in Furman transfer quarterback from the SCF level, Trey Hedden, who is the current favorite to start. 68% completion percentage last year, 17 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. They lost three of their four top wide receivers last year, but they returned the Conference USA leader in yards per game from a receiving perspective and added an FCS running back who put up 958 yards and almost 10 yards per carry last year. But, man, when you look at the trenches, again, they could not run the ball. They gave up 34 sacks. They lost four starting offensive linemen, and they did sign seven guys to try and fix it. Their defense was not great either, even though it was the stronger side of the ball there. They only generated 19 sacks and lost 10 of those, as well as their top tackler at safety. So although they do have some experienced linebackers, this is a game Florida State should control the line of scrimmage. And as long as you don't give up turnovers, it should not be close. And so for me, one stat to know is they did score just 26 first quarter points in all 12 games last year, which is only 2.2 points per first quarter on average. So start fast, bury them quick. That's really my key to this game. I think when you look at this matchup, you're looking for Florida State to win and how it looks, right? I don't expect it to be squeaky clean being the first game of the season with some new pieces, but I don't expect you to go out there and give up three sacks. I don't expect to go out there and see Ashton Daniels throw two interceptions. I want to see him throw the ball cleanly, be on time with his receivers, lead this offense well. I want to see you dominate at the line of scrimmage, dominate at the point of attack, run all over this team. You should run for probably 200 or 300 yards like Florida State typically does against lesser opponents and just roll them up and get out of there with your starters around the third quarter and get some depth work, right, and rest your guys up for that big SMU game. I give Florida State a 99% win percentage here, and Michael has us at 94. I don't think we win 100% because we have seen Jacksonville State in the past, but still, this is a very confident win projection for us here over New Mexico State. Now, game number two, week one, probably the biggest game on the docket for Florida State and Mike Norvell this year because, you know, if you don't project them to go win that Alabama game the week after this, you pretty much have to win this game to get that early season momentum, especially going into that Virginia game, which we'll talk about in a minute. But the line is SMU currently sitting at -2.5 point favorite in your building. They did go 9-4 last year, 14-2 in the ACC since joining. So Rhett Lashley has built a winning program. They are tied for second best odds to win the ACC this year. They are preseason top 25, and they did beat Miami and Louisville last year. So this is a team that knows how to win some big games. Now, there are some questions for SMU this year, which is why I like Florida State to get this game at home, first game of the season for SMU. They do replace both coordinators on offense there and on defense, and they did so with internal promotions, so the scheme won't look any different. But it will be, at least on defense, a new guy playing, calling the plays, and some new voices in the room on offense. Now, Rhett Lashley does call plays on offense, so there won't be a lot of change over there. But Scott Simons leaves the defense there and goes to be a linebackers coach, I believe, with the Cowboys in Dallas. So, man, it's going to be just a change, right? Anytime you change defensive coordinators, you don't know. And it's going to be his first time ever calling plays as a defensive coordinator. But again, he's been with Scott Simons for a long time, so there's not going to be a whole lot from schematic-wise that's going to change there. Now, on the offense, Kevin Jennings does lead the offense there and is one of the best quarterbacks in the ACC. He threw for 3,641 yards and 26 touchdowns last year. He's mobile, he's experienced, and he plays behind an offensive line that allowed only 19 sacks last year and is led by two all-ACC guys who come back. Now, he did have an ankle injury last year, which limited his mobility, but still, they only gave up 19 sacks. So this is going to be a good test for Florida State's defensive line coming out of the gate, right? We'll see how for real this defensive line, as much as they talked them up, we'll see how good they are in this game. Now, as good as Kevin Jennings is, he did throw 13 interceptions, which was second most in the ACC last year, and 11 in 24, which was the third most. So while he has been good, there are going to be some opportunities for Florida State's defense to take advantage of. Now, alongside of him, SMU did lose their top two running backs, but they added a running back from Cal who ran for 943 yards and 13 touchdowns, one of the better producers in the ACC, but he did have the most carries by any back in the ACC. So there is some context around that number. He averaged around 4.06 yards per carry, which was 29th by running backs in the ACC. The biggest question mark for SMU by far starts at receiver. They lost four of their top six pass catchers who combined for 65% of their total receiving yards last year. Now, they do return their number three wide receiver who had over 600 yards and added a transfer from Eastern Carolina that put up 583 in 11 games, as well as, you guys know, tight end Randy Pittman from Florida State. So there are some questions on that offense, but again, you're building around a solid offensive line and a quarterback play caller combo who have a lot of experience together. And those are things that travel. So that is what makes me a little bit nervous there. But again, you're going to ask them to get on the same page right out of the gate in game one. And Kevin Jennings did miss about a week or two of fall camp with a hand injury. Now, he is expected to be fully go by the time Florida State comes around, but still, that's time out of practice. And that could end up being something to watch. Now, defensively for SMU, they were solid against the run last year. They only allowed five rushing touchdowns all season and 3.2 yards per carry. That's big because Florida State wants to be a run-heavy team by the way this roster is constructed. However, SMU was 135th in pass defense last year. So unless they fix that, Florida State could have an opportunity to actually throw the ball in this game, which is another reason why I want to see what Ashton Daniels can do in that New Mexico State game by just, you know, let's see how he can throw the ball. And when you talk about the SMU defense, they did lose some enormous pieces last year, including two safeties who combined for 184 tackles and seven interceptions. They lost defensive end Isaiah Smith that had 18 tackles and 8.5 sacks. They lost their four biggest sack producers who combined for 24 of the team's 34 sacks. They're all gone. They lost all four starters from the defensive line. They did backfill with some transfers, but a lot of those guys were G5, so it's not like they're going to, you know, it's not like they're going to have some overwhelming talent advantage in the trenches on defense. Really, the question for SMU is, can they get those new pieces established early enough to not take a loss like maybe against Florida State or maybe against Louisville, who they play early in the season? And so really, man, if FSU, this matchup revolves around the trenches for me. Like, can you pressure Kevin Jennings without having to bring too many extra people? Can you take advantage of that rebuilt SMU defensive front and maybe throw the ball on a secondary that was questionable last year before they settle in? And if you can do that, I think Florida State has a very good chance of winning this game. If you can't pressure Jennings and you let that tempo offense get rolling, it could be a little bit of a long night, right? I mean, their floor is clearly raised by Rhett Lashley and Jennings in that offensive line, but their ceiling will be determined by how fast those pieces can gel together. Now, a stat I want to know before we get into the win-loss, I want you to know before we get into the win-loss prediction here is they were 14-2 in the ACC, as we talked about. So they've been good. But they've had their fair share of struggles on the road. They were 3-3 in true road games last year. Road wins were at Missouri State, who is a 7-6 team transitioning in their first year coming from FCS. SMU won by 18 is a 27.5-point favorite. They beat Clemson, who was 7-6 last year with a backup quarterback as Klubnik was out in that game. And then they beat Boston College, who was only 2-10. Their road losses were to TCU, Wake Forest, a team who FSU beat by 38. So again, they lost to them on the road, a road struggle, a team that FSU beat by 38 at home. Because remember, FSU was pretty decent at home last year. And then they beat Cal, who was 7-6. And they also have not won their opening game versus a Power Four opponent since 2021. Now, they were G5 for three of those, in fairness. But again, the road and the early season struggles for SMU are real, and that could be a reason for FSU to get this game. So my final verdict is Florida State gets the tune-up, SMU does not. And they have a lot of new pieces to settle in. So does Florida State, but that's where that tune-up game, like we saw Duquesne before LSU in 2022, really kind of played an advantage for Florida State. And so, I mean, while the coach, quarterback, and play caller are things that do travel, man, I just to me, with FSU in Doak at night on Labor Day with a tune-up game, Doak's going to be rocking. Maybe Mike Norvell can bring out some more of his early season magic as we've seen in the past, you know, with the Notre Dame game in 21, taking a team they had no business competing against the overtime, the two LSU games, the Alabama game. Maybe Mike Norvell has another one of those waiting in the bushes with a shovel to the face type of game for them. If this were week 7 in Dallas, I'm not confident that I would pick Florida State. But it's not. It's week 1 in Florida or in Tallahassee inside Doak Campbell Stadium with a tune-up game. So I'm going to edge out SMU here and give Florida State the win with a 55% chance. And Michael has us at 54. So we're both starting out 2-0 for Florida State on the season, leading into, after a bye week, one of the biggest games on the schedule, but not necessarily one of the most important games on the schedule. And that is Alabama. I mean, it's important because every game's important. It's important because it's the next game. But realistically, I mean, in your broad season view, like, you don't have to win this game to still be okay. Like, you want to win this one. But, you know, again, it's going to be a tough task for Florida State because you're talking about a Bama team that went 11-4 last year, made the SEC title game, made the CFP. But crazy enough, man, you're talking about a team that lost two of their last three games by a combined score of 66-10. I mean, when does that ever happen at Florida State? Like, Nick Saban is rolling around in his dressing room at ESPN because he's obviously still with us. That's just crazy. And so this is not Nick Saban's Alabama. There are some questions that they have to answer as well. Now, the difference between last year and this year is they will open against Eastern Carolina at home, and then they go on the road to Kentucky prior to FSU. So they will have two games to kind of get some kinks worked out, unlike last year. But FSU will, of course, be coming off a bye week with some extra time to prepare, whereas Alabama will be coming off of a road contest at Kentucky. And Alabama is interesting this year because they are going to be a very inexperienced team on offense. And despite the record that they had last year, that offense had real problems, right? They had the second worst rushing offense in the SEC at only 3.4 yards per carry, just north of 100 yards per game. And they only averaged 18.7 points per game in their final six games against FBS teams. So they got some things to figure out. And they have to do it without Ty Simpson coming back at quarterback. Essentially, the entire offensive line is getting replaced. Their leading rusher is getting replaced. Three of their top five receiving yardage producers are getting replaced. They are currently, per ESPN, 119th nationally in returning production on offense. So they've got a lot of questions. Now, one question that was just answered is the starting quarterback position. Keelon Russell was just named the starter over the older but also inexperienced Austin Mack, who traveled with Kalen DeBoer from Washington and was beat out by Russell, who, in fairness, was one of the top quarterback recruits in America. He gives him a higher athletic ceiling. And, I mean, he has the potential to be really good. But the question is, you know, we don't really use the term redshirt anymore because now with the 5-for-5, it's more of like the year player they are. He is a second-year player. And last year, he only played 37 snaps. He went 11 of 15 for 143 yards and two touchdowns against lesser opponents. So he doesn't have a lot of game experience. Now, he will get to play against Eastern Carolina and Kentucky before he plays FSU, but this is a situation where you're not getting a guy who's on his first career start like Ty Simpson, but he doesn't have a lot of experience either. So if you can do some things to confuse him, just like you did with Ty Simpson last year, that could be something Florida State could look to exploit there in game three, because it's still going to be very early in the season for a young quarterback. And you're also going to be putting him behind a rebuilt offensive line, which is by far the biggest question for Alabama this year. All five of their starters are being replaced. They do have some guys like Michael Carroll, who does have six career starts as a freshman to build around of, but their starting center is an FCS transfer from Cal Poly, which sounds insane to say at a place like Alabama that has stocked four and five star talent for a long time. Now, maybe he's a diamond in the rough, maybe he's not, but it just kind of speaks to where that program is. And now they did bring in a new offensive line coach to try and fix it, so that will be something to watch. They still have Ryan Williams at receiver. They still have talent. But again, man, can they fix that run game? Can they protect a new quarterback? That's going to be the things to watch, right? Now, Alabama could be good defensively. They were pretty good last year, only 19 points per game, only around 297 yards last year on average. They do have Yonzi Pierre, who returns after 14 and a half tackles for loss and eight sacks last year. He's the guy they're kind of building around, as well as that secondary with Bray Hubbard, Zabian Brown, Dijon Lee, and Keon Sab, all returning from last year. But in the front seven, man, they do lose three starters on the defensive line. They lose three starters at linebacker. I guess you could say the front six, because a lot of times they run a 3-4. But, man, they've lost a lot there too. Now, they do bring in a Virginia Tech linebacker who was a starter for them last year that does add some production to that room. They bring a USC transfer on the defensive line that has some production. But pretty much everybody else is one of those talented but unproven transfers. So, you know, I actually like the way we match up against that Alabama team. I like catching them early. I actually kind of wish you could catch them in game one again, but I think it sets up better to catch SMU, a little bit more winnable game at home in game one, so I'm not mad at it. But I'm glad you catch them early in the year, because to me, when you look at the way these teams match up, like as FSU, as a team who wants to run the ball, you know, if you're looking, if you can stay away from Yonzi Pierre, a guy who is kind of that game-wrecking guy for them, like you ran for 230 yards and four touchdowns against Alabama last year, which were both season highs by that defense. You only needed 140 pass yards to beat Alabama last year. And so if their secondary is their strength, and you can throw just enough to keep that defense honest and run like you did last year, especially with Ashton Daniels at quarterback, I think that gives you a real chance in this game. I mean, Ashton Daniels at Auburn last year ran for 108 yards against them and threw for 259 despite seven drop passes. So he was kind of lighting them up, and that's the same coordinator and the same secondary that we just talked about, right? I mean, even one key to watch in that Alabama game is last year versus mobile quarterbacks using sack-adjusted yardage. Tommy put up 80 yards. Diego Pavia put up 68. Bo Prabula put up 69 at Missouri. Lenore Sellers at South Carolina put up 80. And Daniels put up 114. So they have had some issues with stopping mobile quarterbacks. So that could be kind of an equalizer for Florida State, as Ashton Daniels, again, I mean, kind of cut him up for over 100 yards on the ground last year. Now, the stat to know before we get into the projection is the one I hate the most about this matchup. Now, last year, I kind of felt like Florida State had a sneaky chance in this game, mostly because of the fact that Alabama has struggled outside of Brian Denny under Kalen DeBoer. They're 7-7 away from Brian Denny. The problem is they have not struggled at home. They are 13-1 under DeBoer over the last 2 years, and their only home loss was by 2 points to Oklahoma last year, a team that made the playoffs. Every Power 4 team they beat last year was by double digits. So that's tough to go up against when you're talking about a team that's trying to win their first road game in 2 years versus a team that has only lost one road game in the past 2 years. Now, for Florida State, you've got to start fast. Alabama was 9-0 last year when leading at halftime and 0-4 when trailing. Florida State had that game 17-7 at half last year. So to me, to pull the upset, you can't get into an early hole. You have to try and pressure that new quarterback, take advantage of that new offensive line, and get this game into the fourth quarter, right? You have 12 days to prepare for them, whereas Alabama's coming off a road game at Kentucky that previous Saturday. So, I mean, when we break this down from an honest perspective, Alabama has the talent edge. They're at home. Their defense could be good. But this isn't Saban's Alabama. You know, they don't have – it's not like they don't have a weakness you can't pinpoint on that team. They were picked to finish sixth in the SEC, which is kind of crazy, right? So this is not a game that Florida State can't win. It's just not going to be easy, again, when you're talking about a team looking for its first road win in 2 years against a team that's only lost one game at home in the past 2 years. Now, if FSU beats SMU and has an extra week to prepare, I feel pretty good about that. You know, if Alabama maybe wins but looks rough at Kentucky, that's going to make me feel a little bit better about that game. So I don't think this is a unwinnable game for Florida State. I just think it's a really tough mountain for them to have to climb. No pun intended there. Now, the spread is Alabama currently sitting at around 15.5. So I could see FSU covering that with a pretty close loss here. But ultimately, I am only giving Florida State around a 25% chance. But again, the offensive questions that they have, the way we match up, if we beat SMU and they struggle a little bit against Kentucky, I could bump that up to a 35%, right? I could still see that. Michael's not so rosy. He only has it as a 10% chance and did say that he could see this game getting pretty ugly. But it just really depends on how those couple of early season games go and how Florida State, if they can finally overcome their road struggles. But we'll see, man. That's a big game for Florida State. Obviously, Alabama's going to be looking for revenge. But, you know, I mean, Florida State's going to walk in with a little bit of confidence knowing they beat that team handily last year. So we'll see how that one plays out. Then moving on to game three here, Central Arkansas, not a whole lot to say about this game. Mike Norvell's alma mater, the head coach was his former teammate. That's about the most interesting thing I can give you on this game. Central Arkansas went 3-9 last year. They were picked fifth in an 8-team conference at the FCS level. They lost a couple of their top producers on offense. They do bring back a couple of defensive players that are all conference caliber at the FCS level. But to me, this game really isn't about whether Florida State should win. It's about what it looks like, especially coming off that Alabama trip. Like, if things go poorly in Tuscaloosa, do you show up focused? Do you dominate the line of scrimmage? Do you run all over this FCS team? Can you suffocate that offense? You know, a lot like you did East Texas at A&M last year. Can you get the starters out early and start building on your depth? You know, if Central Arkansas is hanging around in the second half, we got real problems. But this is a game FSU should definitely win going away. The best thing about this game for me is that it does provide some hangover protection from whatever happens at Alabama, whether it's a highly emotional win or a devastating loss or a bad loss or whatever the case may be. This gives you a week between that and Virginia, where you can get a win under your belt, kind of get your footing back under you, and then move forward. But I give FSU a 99.9% confidence, win confidence in this game. Michael has us at 97% and just wants to know, is Mike Norvell going to break out the cornrows in this game like the infamous Central Arkansas receiver picture that he had? Now, I know you might be thinking, why not 100% on this in New Mexico State? Well, look, guys, we saw them lose to Jacksonville State, so nothing's ever 100%. But we both feel really, really good about that game. So that sets us up for one of the other most important games. Like, I have this game against Virginia circled on my calendar as being one of the most crucial games, because if you were to start 2-2, you have to have this game, point blank period. You cannot go into that three-game stretch we talked about at Louisville, at Miami, and Clemson. If you're 2-3, that's going to be really, really tough. That's where the season could go off the rails. So if you can come into this game with a winning record and you get Virginia, this is an interesting revenge game for Florida State after what happened in Charlottesville last year. You know, Virginia is coming off their best season in program history at 11-3. But, man, when you look at last year, that season, they went 3-1 in overtime. 4 overtime games, 5-3-1 score games. So a lot of stuff really had to break right for them to get to that 11-win mark. And that can be hard to repeat. Now, it's not all luck, because they did go 4-1 in true road games. They had a solid defense. They had the best regular season record in the ACC, although they did lose the ACC championship game. They won a bowl game over an SEC team. And really the big question is, UVA had just 11 wins the previous three seasons combined. So was that kind of a fluky season, or is that kind of the new normal for Virginia? That's really the question they have to answer from their perspective this year. Now, offensively, it's kind of a crazy dichotomy that you have here. They lose almost everything at the skill positions from last year. They only return 11.4% of their yardage from last year, which ranks 122nd nationally and third worst in the ACC. Quarterback gone, 1,000-yard rusher gone, top receivers all gone. And we know Chandler Morris was kind of a baller for them last year at quarterback. So they have a ton of questions to answer on the offense. But the reason why Virginia is not a team you can't overlook is they're rebuilding around the most experienced offensive line, not only in the ACC, but in the entire country. And it is led by two all-ACC selections. So if you're going to rebuild an offense, that's a great thing to have from a continuity perspective. So we'll see, man. They do bring in Missouri's old starter, Bo Perbula, at quarterback. He went 7-3 there with the Tigers. He did complete 67% of his passes. He did run for 6 touchdowns. He's a mobile guy, which does matter because Chandler Morris tore you up on the ground last year. But he did throw 9 interceptions in only 10 games, and I don't think that Missouri fought super hard to get him to stay. I'm not super high on Perbula as a quarterback. Doesn't mean he can't be good. I just don't know that he's going to be quite what Chandler Morris was for them last year. But that will remain to be seen. Again, this is a team that you're going to see. I'll talk about in a minute, but you'll see kind of what they got before they get to Tallahassee. The run game could still be good. They added a running back who had almost 1,200 all-purpose yards at Middle Tennessee last year. They have Solomon Beebe, who had more than 1,200 all-purpose yards at UAB and is a dangerous returner. They have a running back who had 7 touchdowns at Tennessee. They have another running back that averaged 6.7 yards per carry against FSU last year. So I wouldn't necessarily say they can't run the ball, especially behind that offensive line. What you're really looking at in this game is, can you force Bo Perbula to throw the ball 35-plus times to a rebuilt receiving core that's going to be making their first true road game in Tallahassee? When you're talking about their NC State game got moved from Brazil to Charlottesville. So this will be their first true road test with a new quarterback and receiver room kind of finding their gel. So I think that's really the path to Florida State winning from a defensive perspective against that UVA offense. Now, on defense, they did only allow 309 yards per game and 19.6 points per game last year. Opponents averaged just 3.4 yards per carry. So again, Florida State's going to have to try and run the ball on a tough run defense, but you did it last year. I mean, you put up 514 yards on them, including 256 on the ground and 38 points. So you've shown that you can score on that defense. Now, ESPN does have Virginia 9th nationally in defensive returning production, and it will still on the fence to see whether they get star linebacker Cam Robinson back. He's coming off an ACL. It's not really been cleared yet, but he could be back by that game. That would be a huge boost because he's the best player on their team. So that will be something to watch. Now, the thing is, when we bring this home here, look, last year Virginia had the double overtime win, 1995 Juju, Friday night in their place, all that stuff going in their way. Now this game moves to Doak, and Virginia is 1-9 all time in Tallahassee. And again, like I said, it's going to be their first true road game of the season with a new quarterback and new receiver rotation. So to me, as I said, if you're 2-2 coming into this game, you cannot afford to lose this game, point blank period. And this is the kind of conference game where you're better than Virginia. You're more talented than Virginia. I know they're coming off an 11-win season. I know they have the momentum in this game. But if you want to be Florida State and get back to the place you want to be, this is the game that you have to win to take a step in that direction. And for me, I think Florida State is able to do that if you can keep them from running the ball with that running back room and that offensive line. If you can do that, man, I feel pretty good about that. Now, I'm not overlooking UVA by any means, and we will get to see them against NC State and West Virginia prior to the FSU game. So it will be interesting to watch those two games and see how things shake out, whether they are for real, whether that was kind of a lightning in the bottle season for them last year. But, you know, just like Alabama's revenge-minded against Florida State, I think Florida State's going to be revenge-minded against Virginia and get the win here. Give me Florida State at a 60% win percentage, and Michael has us at 58% as well. And if you want to know Michael's full context breakdowns, I'm going to be publishing an article that he wrote on the website with his full game-by-game context. That'll be up on the site shortly in the next couple of days. So now, let's move to the tough road slate that Florida State has coming up after that, starting with the trip up to Bourbon Country to take on Louisville. Now, Louisville is number 24 in the preseason AP poll. They were picked third to win the ACC, so this is another solid team coming at you here on the schedule. Jeff Brohm has won 9 games in all 3 seasons at Louisville, but they were only 4-4 in ACC play last year, and they did start 7-1, but then they dropped 3 straight conference games before recovering against Kentucky and Toledo in the bowl. But that being said, Isaac Brown was out for all 3 losses. So he is the player to know. Isaac Brown averaged 8.8 yards per carry last season, 7.7 yards for his career. Louisville was 1-3 in the final 4 regular season games when he was hurt. He is the heart of that offense. So that is the guy to know in this matchup. But their backup, Kewan Brown, did average 7.3 yards per carry himself. So this is a good, really solid 1-2 punch, one of the best running back 1-2 punches you're going to see in the ACC this year. So, you know, Florida State's really going to have to strap it up and bring their run defense on the road to try and upset Louisville. Now, one of the reasons that I think they do have a path for an upset here is Louisville is replacing its quarterback and 4 of the 5 starters on the offensive line. Lincoln Kindholz comes over from Ohio State. He has a lot of athletic ability, and they do like what they've seen from him in fall camp, but he only has 36 career college passing attempts. So really the game plan for Florida State is stop the run and make him throw the ball, play quarterback on down and distance situations. That is the big thing for Florida State because they're also rebuilding their receiving room, you know, around that new quarterback, right? They lost Chris Bell, who had 917 receiving yards last year, and Colin Lacey, who had 635. So you got new offensive line, new quarterback, and new receivers. They're just really leaning on that strong running game. And so they did add a receiver from Vandy that had 806 yards last year and 7 touchdowns. They, all, of course, as we know, added LaWayne McCoy, a former FSU player there that had almost 400 yards and 3 touchdowns, and a tight end from Tulsa that had 528 and 7 touchdowns. So it's not like the cupboard is bare. It's just all new and unproven together. So they will, of course, play some tough games before we get there. So we'll kind of know how that shakes out. Now, on the defensive side of things, the matchup to watch is Louisville's run defense. They only allowed 114 yards per game last year, 3.5 yards per carry. You know, Florida State wants to be a run-heavy team. That's a strength-on-strength matchup. But Louisville did lose some pieces from that defensive front, and they changed defensive coordinators. So you can't automatically copy and paste those 25 numbers to 26, right? And to be fair, man, Bowling Green ran for 190 on them. Virginia Tech ran for 164. SMU ran for 178. And even Toledo ran for 169 yards on them in the bowl game. Now, the name to know on defense is Clev Lubin. He did have 13.5 tackles for loss and 8.5 sacks last year. And that is Jared Verse level production. He's a preseason All-ACC and All-American level player. So you're going to have to game plan around him. Now, as for the Friday night scheduling aspect of this game, it may not be as bad as it sounds on paper, right? Florida State does play Virginia on Saturday at home and then travels to Louisville on Friday. But Louisville, also on 6 days rest, they're playing at NC State the previous Saturday. So they do have to travel on a short week themselves. So that's kind of – they get the home field, but it's not really a rest advantage when you're talking about Florida State getting a home game before this and them having to go on the road. And for what it's worth, a little bit of hope for optimism here. You know, Florida State has beat them up there on a Friday night before when Jordan Travis got hurt, Tate Rodemaker came in, and Johnny Wilson ate up Jarvis Brownlee, and we won 35-31 in a comeback win. Also, Mike Norvell, the only time he's faced Jeff Brohm, they won in the ACC championship with Brock Glenn making his first start, as you know, third-string quarterback, and only throwing for 55 yards. So Florida State has shown it can win this game with defense and a running game. Maybe we run some Wildcat in this game, right? Bring back some Toa Philly type of stuff. But, man, I think you're going to be in a much better place this time around. So the last thing I want to say here, one thing to note, is that while bowls can be tough to judge, Louisville beat an 8-win Toledo team last year, 27-22 in the bowl, and Toledo was using a backup quarterback because their starter had got hurt and an interim head coach. So really not the most impressive way to end the season. Now, Louisville had a couple guys out, but it wasn't quite as bad as Toledo, and they struggled to pull away from them. So just something to watch. So for me, man, when I get down to the verdict on this, Louisville opens versus Ole Miss. Then they get SMU, who is a common opponent. to Florida State and NC State before FSU. If they are 3-0 in those matchups with wins against Ole Miss, SMU, and NC State, I will be probably a lot less confidence that Florida State can go up there and win this game. I mean, last year they did lose three games at home, but they were all by 3 points or less. So it's not like you can't win on the road there. It's just not easy. Now, if they have lost a couple of those games, like say they lose to Ole Miss and maybe don't look good, say they lose to SMU and you beat SMU, I suddenly feel a lot more confident in this matchup. You just got to get this one to the fourth quarter, man. You got to slow down that rushing attack and you got to be able to move the ball on the ground in this game. And again, with the puns here, this is not a mountain FSU can't climb, right? I'm just not confident they do, but I don't think it's a huge ask for them. So I'm going to give Florida State a 40% chance in this game right now on the road. But if FSU starts strong with wins over SMU and Virginia, and Louisville maybe does the opposite and loses a couple of those three games that we talked about, this could easily jump to a 49% coin flip game to me, with Louisville getting the 1% for being a home team. So that is a situation that I very well could see happening. Now, Michael has us at a 41% chance to win this game against Louisville, and we feel basically the same way. It's just a road game, man, and Florida State has to prove it can win road games. So now, because whoever made Florida State's schedule hates happiness for us, we're going to move on to the game I hate the most on the schedule, and that is Miami. And it's the opponent I hate the most. It's also probably, to me, and Michael feels the same way, the toughest game on Florida State's schedule, because Miami is a clear preseason favorite to win the ACC. They're the only team in the conference with a double-digit preseason win projection. They're number 7 ranked nationally and a national title contender. They obviously, as you know, at quarterback, they went out and took Darian Mensa from Duke, who had 3,900 yards passing last year, almost 4,000 yards passing, 34 touchdowns to only 6 interceptions. They got Mark Fletcher, who ran for almost 1,200 yards. They got Malachi Toney, who had 109 catches and 1,200 yards as a true freshman. If that wasn't enough, they went and added Mensa's top receiver at Duke, Cooper Barkate, who had 1,100 yards last year. So when you look at their skill positions on offense, they do return the ACC's leading passer, rusher, and top two receivers. That's just incredibly difficult to defend when you talk about what they can do across the board. Now, they have kicked a couple guys and lost a couple receivers off the team early in the season, so maybe that the depth isn't there from a skill position perspective, but you still got 3 to 4. I mean, you got 2 wide receivers and a running back that are going to be incredibly good that you have to account for in this game. Now, where Miami does have a couple questions is they are replacing 3 offensive linemen who were all drafted, and they're replacing 2 first-round defensive ends. And Miami only allowed 20 sacks last year, and his defense produced 50. So that was a clear advantage. And you don't automatically transfer those numbers over, whether those players are talented or not, until they prove that they can. Because, again, we know firsthand as Florida State fans, replacing Jared Verse and Braden Fisk has not been easy. So, you know, they still do have a lot of talent. I do want to make that clear. I mean, a lot of the guys they're plugging in on the offensive line are still talented. They're just not really proven, and they have a ton of size up front, but they do still have some guys on the defensive line. When you talk about Ahmad Moten, 9 tackles for loss last year, 4.5 sacks. They added Damon Wilson from Missouri, who had 9 sacks in the SEC last year. They bring back their leading tackler at linebacker, Muhammad Torre, and they have a secondary with Bryce Fitzgerald, Xavier Lucas, and O.J. Federico, are all talented guys. So I do think their defense will still be good. It's also year 2 under DC Corey Heatherman, who flipped that defense in year 1. And if we're going to give Tony White a bump for year 2 in his defense, you kind of have to do it for them too, being in year 2 there. The biggest question really is, can that defense do what it did without its 2 game-wrecking first-round draft picks in Bain and Mesidor coming off the edge? Because that really changed how offenses could move the ball against that Miami defense. So that is the number 1 biggest question there. I mean, we know Florida State made the game respectable last year, but it was 28-3 after 3 quarters in your place, you know, and then you have to go on the road this year. You did good against holding the run game in check last year, but you gave up explosive. So I think that's where it really starts for Florida State. You need to test that offensive line, see if you can pressure Mensa, see if you can make them drive the ball down the field, and do not let Malachi Toney or Cooper Barkate get behind you like you did last year and go for explosives. And then the thing that really kind of makes me feel the worst about this game is just the fact that Miami plays at Clemson, then gets an open date, then hosts Florida State. Florida State hosts Virginia, plays at Louisville on Friday, then has to go right back on the road to face Miami again the next Saturday. So Miami gets 14 days of rest while Florida State gets 8 and traveling twice. That's just a bad setup, man. They get home field, they get a bye, 2 weeks of preparation. It's just not ideal, man. And so really, you know, when you talk about this game, my verdict on this one is like, this is the game Miami should win. They're probably going to be favored by 2 touchdowns in this one. They have the talent. They have spent significantly more to go get it. And that's just the name of the game, right? I mean, right now, the painful truth is Miami is rumored to have spent $40+ million on their roster. Florida State is coming in somewhere around $20 million. So it's just the uncomfortable truth of the situation right now until Florida State gets back to where it wants to be. They're at home. They had the scheduling advantage, and they're really a legitimate national title contender. So it would be a big upset for Florida State to win this game. That being said, anything happens in rivalry games, as we know that, right? But I do put this game kind of in the Alabama tier, you know, because I feel like on a neutral field, Miami would be favored over Alabama to win that game. They have a higher preseason win total than Alabama. The one thing I will say, the difference between these two road games is Hard Rock is not Bryant Denny. It holds 40,000 fewer people. Florida State typically does have a good fan showing there. You know, we'll see depending on the record how many show up, but I still think Florida State will have a chunk of that crowd. It's just a big, tough ask to see them go on, to ask them to go on the road with, you know, Miami getting an extra week and a roster that costs almost double yours and go get a win. So, unfortunately, in this one, guys, I have Florida State with a 15% chance of winning this game. Michael has us at 20. It's just not a game I really like. But again, anything can happen in a rivalry game. So hopefully we have some rivalry game magic there. I just don't feel great about that. Now, to me, you go into a bye week here, which is a crucial point in the season. FSU, you know, if you come into this bye week at 4-3 at worst, with Clemson waiting on the other side, like, how invested in the season are you? Are you still playing hard because you have those winnable games on the backside? What if Florida State disaster strikes and you're 2-5 or 3-4? Is this where Mike Norvell gets fired? Is this team even invested in the season? Does things go off the rail and you go like 3-9 or something like that? You know, what if they're 5-2? What if they pulled a big upset? That, to me, I just say this because this is kind of that hinge point of the season where, you know, Florida State could really see things come off the rails if it's a bad start, or they could really kind of build a triumphant ending to the season and get where they want to be. And to do that, they're going to have to beat Clemson on the backside of that bye week. Now, last year, Clemson was number 4 in the preseason AP poll. They were the overwhelming favorite to win the ACC, and they were number 1 in the entire country in returning production. And then they went 7-6. They started 1-3. They struggled against Troy, which raised some major red flags. They fell to 3-5, and then they did keep fighting, and they won their final 4 games to make a bowl, which is what I talk about with Florida State. If you start, like, if Florida State starts 1-3 or 3-5, like, how invested are you to go out and win those final 4 games like a Clemson team did last year? If you can do that, you can have a decent season. But I will say, you know, again, man, when you're talking about Clemson, a team that was a national title favorite at the beginning of the season and finished 7-6, there's a lot of questions surrounding that program right now. Is it still the same Clemson? Is it still up to the standard that Clemson set, or, you know, during their, I don't want to say dynasty run, but their really, really good run they had a couple years ago? Or is this a team that's starting to fall by the wayside? Is this something that Dabo cannot get back? And that's the big question for them, because even when you look at that record last year, Clemson went 7-6, but they only beat 2 teams with a winning record. And that was 27-16 versus Troy as a 31.5-point favorite, and Louisville without Isaac Brown. So I'm just saying, even that 7-6 record isn't as bad as it is. It's not as good as it seems. Now, the offense for Clemson is getting reset. Garrett Riley is out as offensive coordinator. Chad Morris returns as offensive coordinator, the same one who was there during the Taj Boyd era, and they had some good offenses. But again, you're talking kind of like a Gus Malzahn situation where the system may be a little dated now, so we'll see how it works this time around. He did say that he wants to bring back the explosiveness in that offense and try and do about 3 deep shots per quarter, which is just something they didn't do under Garrett Riley. And they do have a couple of good receivers in TJ Moore that had 837 receiving yards last year, and Bryant Wesco, who averaged over 17 yards per catch, to try and put the explosives back in that offense. Now, the quarterback for them this year is brand new. It will be Christopher Vezina. He has basically, he's talented from a recruiting perspective, but he is inexperienced in terms of starts. He only has one career start, which was against SMU last year, where he went 29 of 42 for 317 yards and three touchdowns with no picks. Sounds really good on paper. Also, keep in mind that I mentioned earlier, SMU's pass defense was 135th in the country. So this is something that you're going to have to watch. How does he progress early in that season? You know, they're going to have a game against Miami before they come to Florida State. So that'll be a game to really kind of see how he gets tested. Now, the offensive line also lost some major pieces, including a couple of veterans, as well as Blake Miller, who went in 17th overall in the NFL draft. So they do have some guys returning that have experience. But, I mean, you're changing several pieces in front of a new quarterback. So there are questions to answer there as well. They lost some good skill players too. So Clemson's really – that offense has been a problem the last couple of years. So they're replacing a lot of pieces and trying out a new offensive coordinator to see if they can kind of spark that offense to get back where they need to be. Now, defensively, Clemson was still pretty legitimately good last year. Only allowed 20.5 points per game, 3.5 yards per carry on the ground. The issue was for them this year is how much talent walked out that door, because we know Clemson is still one of the most talented teams in the ACC, but they lost Peter Woods, who was a first-round pick, TJ Parker and Avion Terrell, who were second-round picks, Wade Woodass, who was a fourth-round pick at linebacker, DeMonte Capehart, who was a fifth round. That's five defensive players drafted off that defense last year. So again, like we talked about with SMU and Louisville, you can't just transitive property over the success that they had last year into this year. They're going to have to go out and prove it. But it doesn't mean that they're devoid of talent, right? You still have Sammy Brown, one of the best linebackers in the ACC. And you also have Will Helt, who had 15 tackles for loss and 7.5 sacks last year. So that's a guy, a couple guys you're going to have to game plan around. And like we talked about with Tony White and Corey Heatherman, Tom Allen is back as a defensive coordinator now in year two. So how does that go for them, right? You're talking about, you have to give them a, you know, the benefit of the doubt for that, right? Because we're giving the benefit of the doubt to our coordinator as well. But the good news for Florida State in this game, the thing that I like about it the most is, you know, it's in Doak. And I think for a game like this, you know, as long as Florida State is not something crazy like 2-5 or 3-4 under an interim staff, man, I think at night, Halloween, I'm assuming it's going to be at night. It might not be at night, but I'm hoping it is. It's in Doak. It's Halloween. Hopefully it's a night game. Florida State gets a bye beforehand. Clemson's playing Virginia Tech, who can be a physical team this year, the week before. I think Florida State has a real clear path to getting their first win against Clemson in the last, you know, one in the last 10 years, which is what makes me the most nervous about this game, right? Clemson has won 9 of the past 10 and 4 in a row at Doak. So this is still a very slim margin here. But I don't consider Clemson, with all the questions that they have, all the new pieces that they're bringing in, I don't consider this an Alabama or Miami tier game, right? S&P has them ranked at 23rd versus FSU at 35th. So the gap is not enormous. And then again, they're going to be playing LSU and Miami before Clemson, before Florida State. So we're going to be finding out how for real they are. Clemson could come into this as a a two-loss team versus a three-loss Florida State team or something like that. You know, these teams could have even records by the time they meet. And so, man, I think in this one, it just really depends on how Clemson gels with all those new pieces. But I don't know, man. Maybe it's heartburn, but I got a little bit of a gut feeling that maybe Florida State pulls a upset over the Fighting Dabos inside Doak Campbell Stadium. I'm taking Florida State with a 51% chance to win here in a coin flip if Florida State is still invested and playing really hard. And Michael actually has us at 53% on this game as well. So we're both giving an edge to the Florida State over Clemson in this one. I won't tell you what he initially had, but we both have this as a win here. And then finally, after that, Florida State back on the road, but they get a team that for once in the last however many teams we've talked about, that you feel like Florida State is the clear favorite to win this game. I mean, BC was terrible last year. They went 2-10. They had one of their two wins was against an FCS team. They finished 1-7 in the ACC. They're picked 16th to finish, or 16th in the league this year. They're number 82 in the preseason S&P Plus rankings, which is last amongst ACC teams. Their win total is only at 3.5. And really, man, last year when you look at that 2-10 record, 7 of their 10 losses were by double digits. They were just all bad last year. They allowed nearly 33 points and 433 yards a game. Opponents averaged 5 yards per carry, 8.2 yards per pass attempt. They only generated 17 sacks while allowing 35. So, man, as long as Florida State is healthy and playing hard, this is a game that they should win. They should be able to move the ball on that BC team and put up points. The thing you need to know about Boston College is they did add Mason McKenzie, who is the new starting quarterback after coming over from Division II, where he was the conference player of the year at Saginaw Valley State. Last year, he threw for 2,100 yards, 17 touchdowns, but he did run for nearly 1,000 yards last year and 10 touchdowns. And it is a massive jump in competition coming from D2 to Power 4. So I'm not saying he's going to be the next Trinidad Chambliss like at Ole Miss, because that's kind of the exception, not the rule. But you do have to keep in mind that Bill O'Brien and Tommy Castellanos, a mobile quarterback, did kind of embarrass Florida State inside Duke Campbell Stadium in 2024. So that's something that you have to watch. And they also did add a running back from Liberty that had 1,339 yards and 16 touchdowns last year, which was more than Boston College's entire team ran for last year. So there are some areas for improvement, but their offensive line is also undergoing a massive rebuild with only one returning starter, although they did add some experience transfers to try and fix that unit. But, man, again, this is a game Florida State should definitely win. You got a new DC there at Boston College. They lost their top or their second leading tackler. You know, they got a couple pieces, but you're restructuring a unit that was bad against both offense or against the run and the pass. So this is a game, man. Like, I'm not calling it a free win. And why is that? Because I watched Florida State go on the road and lose to Stanford last year. So the takeaway for me is, this game cannot be the Stanford game of last year, right? This has to be the time you go on the road. If this is your only win of the year on the road, it has to be this one. You have to go on the road and you have to win this game, man. They were 1-6 at home last year. Now, granted, Lord knows this is probably going to be the red bandana game, which is going to make things crazy. And Florida State, again, has struggled on the road. But I do think Florida State gets a win here because Boston College is just terrible. I think the Bill O'Brien era might be coming to an end pretty soon in Chestnut Hill. So I give Florida State a 70% chance to win this on the road here. Michael has us at 65%. Now, moving on to Pitt, your second or your last road game of the year. Pitt's one of those games, man, where I feel like the schedule makes this game significantly harder than necessarily the team makes it, right? To start with, Pitt went 8-5 last year, 6-2 in the ACC. They're picked 9th in the conference this year, and their win total is at 7.5. So really, on paper, they're a solid bowl team that is not much better than you, and this is a game that Florida State should definitely be able to win. But you have to play them on Friday night, 6 days after playing all the way up in the Northeast at Boston College. So, again, you're talking about two back-to-back Northeast trips, this one being on a short week, coming back from Boston College. Like, I don't even know that I would come back from Tallahassee if I was Florida State looking at these two back-to-back games. And to make matters worse, Pitt does get a bye week right before Florida State. So they get, you know, they're basically getting 2 weeks of rest and preparation for Florida State while you get 6 days on back-to-back long trips to the Northeast. I just hate that setup. Man, the ACC really gave Florida State the double bird fingers on this schedule this year, and this is one of those games that I really just hate where it's at, the context of the game more than anything. Now, talking about this Pitt team, of course, the name to know is Mason Heinstuhl, the quarterback that kind of tore us up last year, 21-29 for 321 as Pitt won 34-31. He also rushed for 64 yards. FSU did have two picks, so he wasn't perfect. But now he has an entire offseason as quarterback one. Remember, that was his first road start for the Panthers last year, and he carved you up inside Duke Campbell Stadium. That was the game where you really made your secondary just look uncoordinated, right? So you got to play a lot cleaner game this time around. Now, they have a couple of good running backs to lean on this year, but the one guy that they don't have is Desmond Reed, who most fans have nightmares over. If you remember, he had like right at 200 scrimmage yards last year, 155 through the air, and caught two touchdowns. So at least he is gone. That was one of their top offensive weapons last year. And they do have some receiving turnover, right? They lost their top two receivers and their number one tight end, who accounted for almost half of their receiving production and over half of their touchdowns through the air last year. Now, they do return Blue Hicks, who averaged nearly 18 yards per catch, and they added Malik Knight from Western Carolina, where offensive coordinator Cade Bell came from, who put up 774 yards at the FCS level last year. So they do have a couple of targets to work with. They do have Heinstel coming off a full offseason, but there are some questions that they have to answer on the offense, and they do have most of their offensive line still intact. Now, the offense, or excuse me, the matchup that you really have to watch in this game, besides the quarterback secondary matchup, is on the defense and the run defense that Pitt had last year, right? They only allowed 95 rushing yards per game and 2.7 yards per carry last season. We know that Pat Narduzzi always has a hard-nosed defense that kind of does more with less up there, and that is a really tough run defense for a Florida State team to have to go against, you know, on a short week, that a team that wants to be a running team, right? That's just not an ideal matchup. But the good news for Florida State is Pitt lost two of their really, really solid linebackers. They lost Kyle Lewis, who was an NFL draft pick with 81 tackles and 8.5 tackles for loss. And they lost Rasheem Biles, who had 101 tackles last year. That's 182 tackles and 25.5 tackles for loss out of the linebacker room. So that is a huge, huge hole to fill for them. Now, they still have Braylon Lovelace, who returns after last year, and the defensive line returns a lot. So I don't think they're going to necessarily be bad. But again, man, you can't automatically carry over those numbers from last year to this year when you're replacing two of the best linebackers in the ACC, if we're being honest. So, man, in this one, though, last year, Pitt did allow 28 passing touchdowns and 7.1 yards per attempt. So that's very different from the rushing stat profile. So this might be a game where you're going to have to throw the ball. You're going to have to use play action. You're going to have to force Pitt out of loaded boxes. And, I mean, all in all, they lost five of their top seven tacklers, eight of their 15 interceptions, four of their top seven in PBUs, and their leader in sacks. So Pitt's got some questions on its own. And my verdict on this game is Pitt is a very winnable game, talent-wise, model-wise. This is much closer to where FSU can, you know, should really be able to win this game versus, like, Alabama and Miami. Pitt was only 4-3 at home last year and just 2-3 there against Power Four teams. Florida State has also won both times they played up there since Pitt joined the ACC. What really scares me, as I mentioned before, is the setup more than anything. Boston College on Saturday, fly back to Tallahassee, and then fly right back all the way up to the Northeast to face a team that's been sitting around for 2 weeks preparing for you. And if things weren't crazy enough, this game is on October the 13th. Friday, October the 13th. So why not, right? Golly, what a schedule this is. So for me, man, I like FSU in this game, but I don't like the setup. I think Florida State can win, but right now, because of that setup, I'm giving them a 45% chance to win if they're coming off a win at BC and still playing hard. Now, if they lose to Boston College and they've quit on the season, that number is going to change a lot. But if Florida State's still invested, coming off a win against Boston College, I put this in coin flip territory, right? And Michael has this at 46% as well. So that is very coin flip territory on this game. But then the good thing is Florida State does come back home after that. And that would be really good. If you could get back-to-back road wins, I mean, you're sitting at where you could get to 8 or 9 wins on the schedule, depending on how things went in the first half. Now, NC State is your homecoming game this year. And, man, you know, NC State's one of those teams that, like, you can pretty much describe as annoying, right? They've only had one 10-win season in their entire history. But Dave Dorn has a high floor there. They're always like an 8 or 9 win team. And the unfortunate thing, like we've talked about stats to know throughout this preview, the one thing that makes me the most nervous about all of this is, man, Mike Norvell is 0-4 against NC State and Dave Dorn. So now you're talking about a game I feel good about Florida State winning, but asking Mike Norvell to beat a coach in a program he has never beat, that I don't like. Now, Florida State did not play them in 2023, so they didn't get the opportunity there. But, man, again, that's a stat that's going to stick in the back of my head throughout this preview. Now, the thing to know about NC State is obviously their quarterback, C.J. Bailey, completed almost 69% of his passes last year for 3,100 yards, 25 touchdowns, and 9 picks. He started over 20 games at NC State, thrown for over 5,500 yards and 40 touchdowns in 2 seasons. So he's good. But that doesn't mean he's perfect. He threw three picks against Duke last year, three against Notre Dame, and two against Miami, and they got blown out in two of those three games. And FSU did hold him to his second lowest yardage total of the year. So, you know, this again, he's a good quarterback, but he's not a guy that Florida State hasn't done well against in the past. And their offense does lose some significant players around him. Hollywood Smothers led the ACC in rushing yards per game last year. Tight end Justin Jolly was a first-team All-ACC player. He was their number one receiver in 24 and their number two in 2025. Both of those guys are gone. They still have a couple of good running backs, and they added a Buffalo wide receiver who had 62 catches for 815 yards and eight touchdowns last year. So they do have some pieces on offense, but again, you're replacing your best running back. You're replacing a couple of guys, your best receiver there. And that's an offense that Florida State held in check last year. I mean, you gave up 21 points, which realistically should have been less had you not gifted them a late score to put that game away. The thing for me really with this game is Florida State versus that NC State defense. Last year, they allowed nearly 412 yards per game, including 273 through the air, and only had 20 sacks all season. They lose their top three linebackers, which is insane, right, when you talk about these numbers. Because we know NC State's always had some pretty good linebackers. Caden Fordham had 143 tackles, most in the Power Four. They lost another linebacker with 80 tackles and another one with 61. That's 284 tackles evaporated from the linebacker position just like that. That's hard to replace, especially when you consider they're behind a defensive line that lost all four starters. Now, they did add a Tulane transfer that had 11.5 tackles for loss and eight sacks, and they added a Miami transfer linebacker who had 43 tackles last year. But again, man, you're talking about a defense that basically lost its entire front seven and top two corners from last year. So that's a lot of shoes to fill. And Florida State, you know, their offense was kind of putrid on the road last year, but, you know, this is a game that you get at home now, right? And when you look at that, when you look at that game last year, yes, you did lose 21-11, but as I mentioned, CJ Bailey only threw for 152 yards. Their leading rusher only had 84 yards. You just turned the ball over four times. And I mean, you threw an interception driving inside the 10. You had a player, a punt hit a player in the helmet. You muffed another punt that basically gave away the game at the end that allowed them to seal it. That's a game you should have won in Carter-Finley, a place that Florida State struggles to win. That's a game you should have won last year. So to me, man, when I look at, you know, Bailey's still a good quarterback, but with that defense having a lot of questions, with them losing their best running back and receiver, you know, it's Doak, it's homecoming. You get 8 days after playing on the road at Pitt. This will be NC State's first real true road game in a month after playing three straight home games. So, man, I look at this like I look at Virginia. This is another can't lose type of ACC game for Florida State. Like this is a big swing game for Florida State this year. Like if you're going to be the program you want to be and take that step forward, this is a game you got to win. Point blank period. You got to have this one. And so while that 0-4 stat does haunt me in the back of my mind talking about this game, if Florida State's record is respectable and they're still playing hard at this point, I think Florida State does get the win here. So give me Florida State with a 60% confidence rating. And Michael has us at 62%. So we're both feeling a win here. Now, the cap off the regular season is a rivalry game inside Doak Campbell Stadium on Friday. You're going to be playing Florida in this one, of course, who is one of the biggest rebound candidates in the country this year after going 4-8 last season. But when you look at the preseason hype around that program, man, 27th in the preseason polls, S&P Plus has them all the way up at number 20. A lot of that is because the summer all higher. I mean, he went 43-12 in four seasons at Troy and Tulane, reached a conference championship game every year, and won three of them. He's got talent to work with, which was really never the problem under Billy Napier. That staff was just pretty incompetent. And now they actually have a staff that knows kind of what to do with the talent they have at hand. The other reason that Florida feels kind of is getting some preseason love is because of their returning production, right? They're 10th nationally overall at 66%. But if you break that number down, a lot of that is from the defensive perspective at 77% compared to the offense at 55%. So when you look at it, their defense is number one in the country in returning production, but their offense has a lot of things to replace, right? Offensively, the biggest question right now is quarterback as DJ Lagway transferred to Baylor. Florida did just name Georgia Tech transfer Aaron Filo as the starter after competing with redshirt freshman, or excuse me, second-year player now, Trammell Jones, throughout fall camp. Filo was just named the starter today, Monday, as I'm recording this. He did spend 2 years in Buster Faulkner's offense at Georgia Tech. He came over with him when Faulkner was hired, but he has almost no meaningful Power Four starting experience. And, you know, when you talk about Trammell Jones, if this were to become an in-season competition where maybe one replaces the other, he doesn't have a lot of experience either, right? But we will be 12 games into the season by the time Florida State and Florida match up. So whoever it is will have a full season under their belt. So, you know, it's not so much a matter of whether they'll have experience by then or not. It's just how good did they turn out to be, right? Now, the one thing that isn't certain is Jaden Baugh. Isn't uncertain, should I say, is Jaden Baugh. He ran for 1,170 yards last season, 266 against Florida State. I think he's probably still running on us somewhere around the state of Florida right now. That was actually the second most rushing yards in a Florida game history, which is ridiculous, right? And so he only averaged 137 yards per game before that. So the biggest key, man, Florida State quit in that game. There's no way around it. You can't let that happen again. Now, they are pretty loaded at receiver, if I'm being honest. Better than at least what those numbers suggest. You got Vernell Brown, who led with 40 catches and 512 yards as a true freshman. Dallas Wilson had 174 and 3 touchdowns in only 4 games. He put up 111 and 2 scores against Texas. They also added Auburn transfer Eric Singleton, who put up 58 catches last year and has more than 2,000 career receiving yards. And he also did play in Buster Faulkner's system at Georgia Tech. So there's continuity there. And, man, really, the thing is, like, if your instinct is to load the box to stop Jaden Baugh, they can throw the ball, too. They should be if the quarterback position works out. Now, the offensive line is the second biggest question mark this year. Florida does replace 3 starters, including an All-American center, which is, again, man, you're going to have to a second-round NFL draft pick. So they got some questions, too. Now, they did bring in a guy from Georgia Tech who already knows Faulkner's system, but John Summerall did say that they are still working through some combinations to find the final starting 5. So offensive line and quarterback are some big questions, but they have a good running back and they have some good receivers as well. Kind of sounds a lot like our team as well, man. Now, when you talk about the defense, again, 77% returning production, number 1 in the country, and they hired a new DC, Brad White, who comes over from Kentucky. And S&P Plus has Florida at 12th nationally on that side of the ball. And again, keep in mind that Ashton Daniels' worst game by far last year at Auburn was against Brad White's Kentucky defense, but Hugh Freeze was still the play caller there. So, man, you know, I mean, the Florida defense wasn't dominant last year. They only had 20 sacks. So we'll see, man. But, you know, you just have to – they made some good hires at Florida. They have a tough schedule. They're going to be tested by the time they get there. Their record's probably not going to be much better than yours if you're able to have that respectable season that we talked about. And, you know, even when you look back to that game last year, you put up 407 yards and you were only down 17-14 at halftime before Florida kind of took over. So, you know, the thing when I look at this game at the end of the season, this comes down to who wants it more. And what makes me nervous about that is Mike Norvell is now 2-3 against Florida and 0-2 against interim coaches. So, I mean, even last year, Billy Gonzalez was 0-4 as interim coach before getting his only win beating Mike Norvell, which is gross. And so it makes me nervous to say that, like, if Mike Norvell can't beat Florida's interim staff, how is he supposed to beat a real staff who I like mostly all of their hires that has a little talent edge too? But that being said, I do think this game is winnable. It's at Doak. The teams are kind of projected to be in the same rough neighborhood there. And so, man, if you can just bottle up Jaden Baugh and pressure that quarterback and don't let them hit explosives behind you, I think Florida State, this is a game that they can be in, right? It's a rivalry game. Anything goes. You're at home. They have some question marks. Both teams are probably going to be carrying a few losses into this game. So, again, man, it just really comes down to who wants it more. Florida has a slight talent edge and a new staff, so the messaging isn't quite as stale depending on how Florida State season goes. So, right now, I'm putting this game in coin flip territory. And sadly, I am going to put Florida at – I'm going to give Florida State a 45% chance in this game. And Michael has us at 47. So I both think we feel the same way. Like, this is a very winnable game for Florida State. It's just, man, when you're 2-3 against Florida, you've lost an interim staff twice, and they really did build a good staff with some talent over there. It's how invested are you in this game, right? The fact that you lost last year the way you did just kind of makes it hard to pick Florida State, you know, in this game. But I do feel like it is a winnable game for the Noles. Now, let's bring this thing home now that we have talked through all that. I hope you guys are still sticking around with me because I know this has been a long one here, but I wanted to give you a good solid breakdown on what to expect from the schedule. But man, when you look at it all in all, that puts me around 6.64 wins. That puts Michael around 6.47 wins. The S&P Plus rankings have us at 6.6. But if you hit the over, that's 7-5, right? My raw record prediction is 7-5. Michael is also at 7-5. Now, he was at 4-8 the first time we recorded this. So I don't know what kind of positivity he found, but I will take it, right? And so, man, we'll see. I mean, we are right in line with kind of the preseason win projection of 6.5. We're kind of right in line with what S&P has. But to me, when I break this season down, when you break down the 2026 season for Florida State, I think this is really what the numbers tell you, especially going off that S&P Plus, right? There are six swing games that really determine your season that sit between a 45 and 60% win confidence for us. And those swing games are everything. I basically see those six games are going to determine your season, right? And those six games are SMU, Virginia, Clemson, Pitt, NC State, and Florida. I think you have two gimme wins and one you should win and two likely losses. And so when you talk about that, like those six games alone account for 3.56 expected wins in my calculation. And for this season, if you break that down, like in those six games, if you go 1-5, you're probably staring at 4-8, if we're being honest. If you split them and go 3-3, you're probably at least bowl eligible at 6-6. If you go 4-2 in those games, you're probably in the 7-win neighborhood. If you go 5-1, now, I mean, 8-4 becomes extremely realistic without having to pull any crazy upsets against an Alabama or a Miami. I mean, remember, all of these games, like when we get to the S&P rankings, like all of these games are going to be a lot closer than people think. And that's what we're going to talk about next. But, you know, that being said, man, those six swing games are going to make your season. So what is your record, you know, if you don't allow the Boston College game to be the Stanford game of last year and you take care of those two cupcakes? You're starting at three wins right there with two more than likely losses. So in those six games, SMU, Virginia, Clemson, Pitt, NC State, and Florida, what can you do? What can your record be in those swing games? Because that's going to make up your season. Now, on the downside of things, for the negative Nancys out there, I can absolutely see a scenario where they start 2-5, 3-4, Mike gets fired, and the season goes off the rails. I can also see a situation where Ashton Daniels surprises us at quarterback, the O-line comes together, the defense takes that step in year two that we're talking about, both units finish around top 30 in the country, and we win 8 games. That is certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I do feel better about this team. I just feel really a lot worse about the schedule than I did last year. But, you know, man, again, I at least look at it like this. If this team is better and doesn't quit, when you think back to last year, the margin between, as I talked about in the opening of this show, the margin between that team being an 8 or 9 win team and being a 5 win team was very slim. So I don't think Virginia is going to be a better team this year. I don't think NC State's going to be a better team this year. And both of those games are at home. So you should hopefully, if you don't beat yourself like you did in both of those games last year, you should win that, right? Don't lose BC like you did Stanford last year, who was a worse team than Stanford last year, plus the two cupcakes. And that puts you at 5 wins right there. You know, the question is, can you avoid that Stanford-type letdown? Can you pull an Alabama-type upset somewhere along the schedule? And, like, realistically, to get to an 8-4 season, I know that's not what Florida State fans want to hear. I know that's not the standard, but against a tough schedule like this, if it turns out to be as tough as it looks on paper, then at the same time, man, like, 8-4, a respectable 8-4 where you're not getting blown out and you don't have any embarrassing losses is not a bad year against a schedule like this, to at least get you some belief back in this program, to bring some NIL dollars out, to maybe have a few fun wins along the way, right? At least get to a decent bowl game with the schedule that you would have. And that doesn't include you having to beat Alabama or Miami to get to 8-4. So I think that is kind of where I look at, man, you just got to do the little things. You got to stay in the fight. You got to stay invested and act like you're Florida freaking State for a change, right? Don't be running out here. You know, put the fear of the spear on that helmet back in there, right? Now, that being said, we'll probably go 4-8 and Mike gets fired. But, hey, at least then we get a new coach. But at the end of the day, man, I do see that path The crazy thing is, man, when you have a program that has gone 23-4 and then 7-17 in the past 4 years, you don't know where this team's going to end up, right? If you told me Florida State was going to win 9 games this year or 3 games this year, I'd probably believe you on both sides of it. And that's just where Florida State is right now. So let's talk about this S&P Plus section that I told you guys to stick around for. So hopefully you're still here rocking with me as we get ready to kind of uncover a little nugget that has me feeling a little different way about this season. Now, for those of you who don't know what S&P Plus is, S&P Plus is a formula put out by ESPN's Bill Connolly that is a tempo and opponent-adjusted measure of college football efficiency. It is a predictive measure of the most sustainable and predictable aspects of football. It is not a resume ranking. And along those same lines, these are not intended to be a guess at what the AP Top 25 will look like at the end of the year. It's just basically what they have to run on. This is what they project teams to be. I went back and looked last year. It did project the preseason rankings. The Clemson was dead on. The Miami game was dead on. And then you had a couple of games that were pretty close. So no preseason rankings are perfect. But it's just interesting when you hear me out on this, right? So how S&P Plus does it is they do rankings, and then they do an S&P rating, which is basically how you can figure out the spreads between two teams, right? And from the raw rankings perspective, Florida State has 6 teams that rank above them: Miami, Alabama, Florida, Clemson, SMU, and Louisville. And then you have 6 teams that rank below you: UVA, Pitt, NC State, Boston College, New Mexico State, and Central Arkansas. So that is why Florida State is really sitting there at that 6-6 win projection by a lot of people, that 6-win projection. And so really, when you look at Florida State's schedule, as I talked about before, you have that kind of 2-3-7 setup, right? Using the S&P. Now, one other thing I will say about S&P is Bill Connolly says, so like when you look at an S&P Plus rank, a rating, like say Miami might be 12-1 or 12.1 and Florida State might be 9.1. So what you can do is you can subtract the difference of those and you can kind of make those. That's how you kind of get to a point spread, how you come up with it. And you can add 2.5 points for the home team. So when you figure up the preseason S&P Plus point spreads, you have 2 games that FSU is going to be a clear underdog. The S&P puts Miami as a 15.5-point favorite over Florida State and Alabama at an 11-point favorite at Florida State. Obviously, both of those teams get the home field bump. There are 3 games where Florida State is a clear favorite to win. That is obviously New Mexico State, where FSU is a 30.1-point favorite in the preseason, which, again, remember the line on that is 30.5, so that tells you how close this is to the actual Vegas spread. Central Arkansas, obviously your major favorite there, and Boston College, who you would be a 9.1-point favorite on the road. But then 7 games, according to the S&P Plus ratings, are within 1 touchdown, and 5 of them are at home. And remember, Florida State was 5-3 at home last year, despite not winning any games on the road. So this could get interesting, right? And those games are SMU at home. Florida State is a 0.5-point underdog when you adjust for home field advantage. So SMU is only favored in the S&P ratings by 0.5 point. That is a coin flip of all coin flips. Virginia at home. Florida State is a 3.5-point favorite. Louisville on the road. Louisville is a 4.5-point favorite over FSU. Of course, again, they get the home field bump. Clemson at home is against Florida State. Clemson in Tallahassee is a 1.5-point favorite over Florida State using the S&P spreads. Pitt, Florida State goes on the road, but is a 0.4 points, now about 0.5 point favorite in Pitt. NC State, Florida State gets at home and is a 5.9-point favorite, almost a touchdown favorite over NC State. And Florida is actually a 3.5-point favorite over Florida State in those S&P Plus rankings. So what does that tell us? What that says is using a win probability conversion for those location-adjusted S&P point spreads, Florida State has just as much chance to be a 5-win team as they do an 8-win team, because the probability breaks down to being a 5-win or fewer team is around a 24% probability. Being an 8-plus win team is around a 28% probability. So really, that's the thing, man. It all comes down to those games, those swing games we talked about. where is going to be the difference between you being a 5-win team and an 8 or 9-win team. You just have to find a way to win those games this year. And again, the last thing I want to talk about on S&P Plus here is if you do what I call a schedule swap win. This is a kind of a metric we came up with here at Plant the Spear. We're like, if you put Florida State, you know, you hear raw win totals suspected, you know, in the early part of the season where you're like, okay, you know, this team's expected to win 8 games and this team's expected to win 6. So you think this team is probably better on paper than that team. Well, that's not always the case. It depends on the schedule as well. Because when you put Florida State against some other team's schedule out here that they face this year, it gets a little bit interesting, right? And a couple of good examples of that is, if you look at SMU, they are projected to win 8.3 games per S&P Plus this year, and Florida State is projected to win 6.6. On SMU's schedule, Florida State would be projected to win 7.4 games, whereas SMU on Florida State's schedule would be projected to win 7.4. Florida State on SMU's schedule would be projected to win 7.6. If you look at Virginia, they're projected to win 7.8, where Florida State is projected to win 6.6. So again, Virginia sounds better on paper right now. But if you trade their schedules, then Florida State would be projected to, if you put Virginia against Florida State's schedule, that win projection falls from 7.8 wins to 6.3, and Florida State would jump to over 8 wins from 6.6. And then the last one I have here for you is NC State, which is probably the most pronounced example. So when you look, they are projected to win 7.1 games this year against the number 68th ranked schedule. Now, if you trade them for Florida State schedule, then they would be projected to win just 5.7 games. And Florida State on NC State schedule would be projected to win 8 wins. Same teams, different context. So the point of that is, as we get ready to end this episode, is the fact that when you look at the S&P and you look at the win totals, these teams, those swing games that Florida State has, like I said, you are going to be favored in the 2 cupcakes in Boston College on the road, and then you are going to be probably a 2-touchdown dog to Alabama and Miami. But those 6 swing games really make your season, and all of those, as of right now, are projected to be, per S&P Plus, within a touchdown spread of each other. And 5 of those are at home. So if Florida State can have the type of home record that they did last year, you can see 8 wins, right? You can see a 7-5 season like Michael and I both have. But if you lose a couple games early on and you fold under adversity and you don't do the little things right, that's where the season can come unwound and Florida State could end up racking up some losses and things go crazy. So that's going to be it for this show, guys. I just wanted to take you through the entire schedule, some big picture things. I know this was really long, but this is our final preseason show. And so we wanted to do it full on justice. I wish Michael could have been here for this one, but I'm glad we can finally get this out after trying for 3 times in this one. So let me know your win-loss prediction in the comments below if you're watching on YouTube. I know a lot of you guys, when we talk about where from a poll perspective that I put out on social media, we had some pretty mixed results, right? Twitter has Florida State favored to go 5 or less wins at 39%, 33% at 6-7 wins, 23% think Florida State will win 8-9 games, and a mere 5% think 10-plus wins. Now, when we flip over to YouTube, the numbers were 10% think Florida State will win 10-plus games, 46% will win 8-9, 29% think 6-7, and 15% think 5 or less. So for us guys, what we're really looking at here is there is such a wide variance across where Florida State can be. I think it really just depends on, you know, how they do in that SMU game, how invested they are throughout the season. Can they do the little things? But I feel good about this team. I feel bad about the schedule, but there's a clear path to 8 wins for this team. And there's a clear path to going 4-8 either as well. So we're just going to see, man. But that's going to do it for us, guys, on this episode. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Again, I know this one was pretty long, but I appreciate you sticking around for those that did. We have a preview with ACC Network host Taylor Tannenbaum coming up this week. Make sure you check out that episode. Make sure you check back for our Friday live show. And then again, New Mexico State on Saturday, we will have a post-game reaction show for you guys coming live after that game. So check out PlantTheSpear.com, our website where we have all kinds of written stuff. Again, I'll have Michael's full breakdown of his confidence of win and loss. I'll have that S&P article up there so you can kind of get more in-depth insights on that. We'll have a lot of stuff rolling out coming up this week, so make sure you check that out. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. Rate and review on the podcast. Appreciate you guys sticking with us, and we're looking forward to hopefully what is a better season for the Seminoles, and we will catch you guys on the other side. Thanks, as always. Go Noles.